Baseball is all about tradition, but every home game brings something new. Just like Mio Sparkling Sake, crafted with time-honored Japanese brewing techniques, Mio delivers a modern twist. Slightly sweet, refreshingly effervescent, and as crisp as a perfect pitch. Whether you love sake or just want to discover something new, Mio is a crowd pleaser. Light, bubbly, and easy to enjoy. At Citi Field or at your favorite spot, ask for Mio Sparkling Sake by name. A new tradition. Served chilled. Brought to you by Takara Sake, proud sponsors of the New York Mets and the Rico Bronya Podcast.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The easiest thing you'll ever do is keep your car serviced with Roda.
That's a real 5-star Google review from Diana S. And honestly, she nailed it. Roda is the DMV's most trusted auto shop. Maintenance, repairs, and detailing with free valet pickup and drop-off. No hidden fees and no pressure. Book in minutes at Roda.com. And save 20% with code POD20. It's Rota. Duh.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
It is indeed episode 689 of Rico Bronya. Welcome into the Rico. The Mets are getting set to open up a 6-game homestand against American League opponents, the Detroit Tigers and the New York Yankees. They complete a West Coast trip that I think we all agree was disappointing as they go 5-4 and they lose the final two games of this trip with an LD offense to the extreme. They had to do something. And when you're sitting in the middle of May, your options are limited. We've gone over firing the manager. They have opted not to do that. Not to try to spark the team by firing a manager the way the Philadelphia Phillies have. Option two is to fantasize about making some kind of trade, but very rarely are you going to see trades made in the middle of May. It just doesn't happen often. So we could fantasize about bats or bats that make sense, but was any deal really going to happen in the middle of May? And then the third option, besides doing nothing, was to call up one of your prospects. And so AJ Ewing got the call on Monday night. And I think that two things can be true at the same time. In one breath, I want AJ Ewing to be called up. I think I have said that numerous times on the Rico. I wanted him here. He went up to AAA, only played 12 games. He played incredibly well after tearing up AA, tearing up AAA. It's a very small sample size, but sometimes there are kids who just can get here quicker. So the emotional side of me, the one who still wants this season to somehow turn magically, the person that also wants to be entertained and not have to sit there and watch Austin Slater every other day, wanted this call to be made. And I think that's the majority of Met fans. I can't imagine there were many Met fans who got the news on Monday night or Tuesday morning. Maybe you're getting the news courtesy of the Rico that they're calling up AJ Ewing. I can't imagine many Met fans were mad about the news or even disappointed about the news. So, yeah, he could potentially be the spark this team is looking for. And from an entertainment standpoint, like I mentioned, this is now becoming a dull, boring season. And so instead of watching veteran players who stink, it is certainly more exciting to watch a kid who's 21 years old and is a top 100 prospect. So that part is true. Let's put that to the side. The other part that's also true is that the Mets are desperate. And this is a desperate move. If you go back to last year, when the Met pitching was really, really struggling, Jonah Tong, in an odd way, was similar because Jonah Tong probably wasn't ready, but he performed. He performed well. So it's not as if Jonah Tong was pitching to a 6 ERA in the minor leagues, but he had very briefly gotten his promotion, and the Mets, on a combination of, yes, the kid is doing well, and yes, the kid is earning it, but the combination of also having a desperate need, called up Jonah Tong, and he was overwhelmed. He was not ready. It is similar in that the Mets are desperate. This lineup stinks. We all know that. And as you're trying to save the season, because time is a ticking when you're 10 games under 500 in the middle of May and you've created such a deep hole, one of the miraculous Hail Marys that could occur is calling up a young player, especially someone like this. He isn't some kind of big slugger. He's a guy who can impact the game in a lot of different ways, whether it's his glove or it's his speed or it's his ability to put bat on ball. Like, he's a fiery kind of figure that can spark this team in different aspects. You're desperate. The Mets are desperate. Two things can be true at the same time. The Mets could be desperate for making this call to A.J. Ewing after only 12 games in AAA, while simultaneously it being a move that we all welcome. Those things are both true. Desperation from the New York Mets and this front office to try to save the season, and excitement from us that they're calling up a kid who maybe can spark this team a little bit. So that was my reaction when I got the news on Monday night. Like, I'm excited, but I also understand that David Stearns and this front office is operating from a place of desperation. Because like I mentioned here at the top of the Rico, when you are sitting at a crisis point in a baseball season, and they are clearly at a crisis point at 10 games under 500 in the middle of May, your options are limited. We've gone over the firing the manager option. They are deciding not to do that. And while it's worked in Philadelphia, it's worked incredibly well in Philadelphia since firing Rob Thompson for Don Mattingly, there's certainly no guarantee that would have worked here. The difference, I think, between the Phillies and the Mets is that the Phillies are actually really talented. The Phillies are actually really good. You watch this Met team every single day. They need an infusion of talent. It doesn't feel like it's just changing the voice. Now, I would have changed the voice. I've made that point clear for a few weeks now. I would have tried changing the manager. But I also see the difference between the Philadelphia Phillies and the New York Mets. One team is a lot better than the other team. So if you're needing an infusion of talent, where do you go? And the Mets are going to the minor league levels with A.J. Ewing. And I admit, I'm very excited about it because we are talking about a legitimate top 100 prospect. We are talking about a guy who over the last few years has just shot up the Met farm system. Remember, last year in 2025, he played in Brooklyn. He played in St. Lucie. He played in Binghamton. The year before that, in 2024, he was down in the Florida Gulf Coast League. I mean, he has really shot up the minor league system. And what you notice by A.J. Ewing's numbers is that he's hit everywhere he's gone. Everywhere this kid has gone, he's performed. So far this season in Binghamton, before he got the call, he had played 18 games. He hit .349 with a 1,053 OPS. He stole 12 bases, was caught once, walked 17 times, struck out 15 times. And that's important because when I say that he can impact the game in a lot of different ways, even if he doesn't come up here and hit .350, that's one of the things he can do. He can draw walks and not strike out a lot. Like, the odds are limited that he's going to come up here and just be completely overwhelmed and strike out every other at bat. When he got the call to Syracuse, and again, a very small sample size, 12 games, .326 average, 5 stolen bases, 5 walks, 5 strikeouts, and .827 OPS. Very limited sample size, which is why you look at this and say, boy, they are rushing him to a degree. And they are. They are rushing him. But, you know, you go through the annals of baseball history, and it would be a laborious thing to go through like every prospect and see how much time they had at AAA, how much time they had at AA. And you'll study it and you'll come up with no clear result because there are so many different examples in terms of how much time you need in the minor leagues. I remember all the way back to John Olerud not needing any time in the minor leagues. Or you jump to Michael Harris, who helped spark the Braves a few years ago when he got the call from AA. There are certainly a lot of examples that go both ways. And then there are others who come up here and they're slightly overwhelmed. One guy that jumps out at me, and I would almost use it as a sort of comparison, is Michael Conforto. Go back to 2015, and I wouldn't say the Mets were in the same level of desperation back in 2015. When they called up Michael Conforto, they were 49-47, and they were 3 games out of first place. So they certainly needed the bat. There's no doubt about that. But they weren't like fully desperate, save the season kind of mode like they are right now with A.J. Ewing. But when they made that call for Conforto, and it was right around the time, I think, that Clayton Kershaw almost pitched a perfect game. I'll never forget that game at Citi Field. Clayton Kershaw was on the mound for the Dodgers, and it was the only time I ever went to a baseball game where everyone sat down in my section and talked before the first pitch about Clayton Kershaw throwing a perfect game. And the reason we did that was the combination of, yes, Clayton Kershaw was at the height of his powers, but also the fact that the lineup that was being put on the field was so bad, was so pathetic, that we actually thought, wow, he could throw a perfect game today. But in terms of the minor leagues, Michael Conforto played college in 2014. Now, his age upon drafting, kind of similar to A.J. Ewing. He was 22 years old when he got the call to the major leagues. But in 2015, the year that he got the call, he started the year at single A, played 46 games down at single A, hit .283 with 7 home runs and 811 OPS, got the call to double A, played 45 games, hit .312 with 5 home runs and an 899 OPS, and then he made the jump over triple A to come to the major leagues. So Conforto is an example of somebody that needed less time in the minor leagues. I mean, it wasn't even a full season when you think about that. And he made the jump. And if I told you his numbers upon the call, forget about what he did after. I guess you want to think about what he does after, because calling up A.J. Ewing is not just about 2026. You are thinking about the impact he's going to have on the future. But for the sake of this discussion, if you just think about what he did in the short term, Michael Conforto played 56 games for the Mets after he got that call with very limited time in the minor leagues. And he had .270 with an .840 OPS. I think all of us would sign for that right now. The negative to Conforto is that he ended up in AAA because the following season, he got off to a bad start and got resent down. And Conforto is an odd one, because when we talk about Met prospects, and we've seen so many prospects over the years, there's different levels to this. There are the guys who just don't pan out and become busts. And when I mention their name decades later, you almost chuckle and say, oh, my God. And remember when we were in love with Fernando Martinez? Ay, ay, ay. Remember when we were...
Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth, everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
When the stakes rise and the lights get bright, that's when you find out who can really swim. Deep Waters is a new UFC podcast from CBS Sports. Every Monday, myself, Dean Thomas, alongside with legends of the sport, Chris Weidman, Jorge Masvidal, and Dustin Poirier, bring you inside the octagon like no one else can. Deep Waters, new episodes every Monday. Watch on YouTube or listen on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get podcasts.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spell babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
In love with Alex Ochoa. That was a trade, but nevertheless a prospect after the Bobby Bonilla trade. So you've got the levels of guys that just don't pan out whatsoever. And then you've got the guys that, like, had careers. Michael Conforto had a career. I think as we sit here today, and by the way, he's done a pretty good job in Chicago, but as we sit here today, no, you have a grander view for A.J. Ewing than Michael Conforto. I totally get it. You want this guy to be a superstar. You want this guy to be a five-time All-Star, part of the core, the new core of the future New York Mets. So if I say Michael Conforto, I think the response is disappointment. But in terms of what he did upon being called up in 2015, that wouldn't be a disappointment. And what I'm looking for, and I think what we're all looking for, is just a little bit of a spark. Because for this Met offense to get going, it's going to take more than just the calling up of A.J. Ewing. Juan Soto can't have an 0-4. Bo Bichette can't have an 0-4 in a series, which is a big reason why they lost 2 out of 3 to Arizona. You can't have Soto and Bichette go 0-20. The volatile nature of Mark Vientos' season he's got to find some consistency. I'm not confident in that. I'm just describing what would need to happen. Same thing with Francisco Alvarez. Same thing with Brett Beatty. Those are three young players, all of which came up at different levels of prospectness. And I think we'd admit all these years later, all three of them are disappointments. They may not be Fernando Martinez disappointments, but they're disappointments. But if this lineup is going to turn, and when I say turn, I don't even mean becoming a top five offense because that's delusional. I mean not being a bottom five offense. Like, what's crazy about the Mets right now is that if they had an average offense, just an average offensive team, they were 15th in the league in runs scored, we're probably tacking on five or six wins. And if we're tacking on five or six wins, all of a sudden, where are they? They're a 500 team. Like, their pitching hasn't been awful. And certainly you look at the Arizona series, that's a great example of it. If you have a functioning offense, maybe you sweep that series or at least win two out of three. If you have a functioning offense, this nine-game road trip goes a lot differently than 5-4. If you have a functioning offense, you don't get swept by the Colorado Rockies a few weeks ago. So I'm not asking for anything crazy, like all of a sudden they're going to become murderers row. But with simply a functioning offense, they'd win more games. The hope with a call-up of A.J. Ewing, a spark plug, a guy who puts bat on ball, a guy who steals bases, a guy who can force the action, a guy who, dare I say, can get on base because God knows they don't do that enough. If that means scoring a few extra runs and the Mets can continue to pitch at a pretty decent level, well, that's more wins. And I'm still at the point in this season in which I'm hoping for wins. I haven't reached the tank world that I got to with my basketball team or my football team. And how'd that work out? I mean, seriously, it doesn't work. So I want wins. And when you look at this Met roster, as flawed as it is, and you look at this lineup as flawed as it is, yeah, a 22-year-old kid from AAA who's been producing at every level feels like it gives you a better chance to compete. I'm very excited about his defense. I think A.J. Ewing's high-level defensive quality in center field probably means that Carson Bench can now be the everyday right fielder. We have seen Carson Bench move all over the outfield. Juan Soto had his injuries and his DH'd a lot. Obviously, Luis Robert Jr. being knocked out has forced some Carson Bench in center field. Now Carson Bench can become the right fielder. And this is a Met outfield that I think every single day, Soto's a little different because I know he'll still have DH days. But this is an outfield that should be, for the most part, Juan Soto, A.J. Ewing, and Carson Bench. I know one of the questions will be, what about second base? What about second base? I think we have seen very clearly the never-sitting Marcus Semien. And at the bare minimum, even if Marcus Semien continues to produce at a 225 level with a pace of hitting about 8 home runs, I think they view his defense as a plus. And it has been a plus, I admit that, as we're going to throw him out there every single day at second base. I think A.J. Ewing comes up here and he plays center field every single day. And he should. I also think, and this is very important, he should play center field every day, even against left-handers. I don't want to see this sitting against lefties. As I look ahead to this six-game homestand, schedule-wise, in the six games, they will face two left-handed starting pitchers, Framber Valdez off of his suspension and Ryan Weathers off of his near-no-hit bid for the Yankees on Monday night in Baltimore. I'd start him in both games. I think you throw him right in the mix. And you see what he can do, and you see if he can spark this team. But is it a desperate move? Of course it is. It's a desperate move that I agree with, right? That's how I view this. I am in favor of this. I wanted this. I think I was tweeting out about 2 weeks ago. As soon as he got to AAA, I was like, screw it. Just have him skip AAA. Come right up. The only thing I'm confused about is why Nick Morabito is not joining him. Nick is already on the 40-man roster. He's a right-hand hitter, so that would certainly help balance out the lineup. He's another guy that could spark this team. He's produced at AAA, and if you want a right-handed bat up here, God knows we don't have to look at Austin Slater and Andy Abanez anymore. So what about Nick Morabito doesn't make him ready? Would be my question for this Met front office. Obviously, they feel AJ Ewing is ready. He already jumped him, and he's coming up here, and I'm glad. But there's more youth on the way, and I think Nick Morabito should be the next guy. Ryan Clifford is going to be another guy talked about a lot. I think he's just got to hit more consistently. He got off to a bad start. He's hit a little bit more. There's your first baseman potentially to replace Mark Vientos. What I am intrigued about with Ryan Clifford, because I honestly don't know the answer, and I wouldn't know the answer until I watch him every day. What kind of defender at first base is he? Because, and I'm going to try to not get too upset when I say this. I was lectured by a lot of people in this RICO audience about how by accident, the Mets would be better defensively at first base because Pete Alonso was such an abomination. Obviously, you're all wrong. You've turned out to be wrong. Not only has Pete had a decent defensive year, actually a really good defensive year based on some metrics at first base, but forget that. Even if we hold him to the same standard of the last few years, look who's played first base. It's been Mark Vientos most of the time. And while I disagree with Keith Hernandez's assessment that he's not a first baseman, he is a first baseman. He's a crappy first baseman. I can't even pick on Jorge Polanco because the guy played two games at first base. We haven't seen him since. And now he's dealing with an old new injury. I mean, Jorge Polanco is Jed Lowry. We'll never see him again. And he's got another year left on his contract. We saw a little bit of Brett Beatty at first base. I didn't think he looked horrible over there. But the defense at first base has been atrocious. I wonder what kind of defender Ryan Clifford would be at first base. So the AJ Ewing spark begins with a series against the Detroit Tigers. A couple of other things I want to touch on, because I mentioned at the top of the RICO that as the Mets are facing this crisis point in the season, one of the options, fire the manager. We've talked about that ad nauseum. Another option would be to make a big trade. And obviously, there are not a lot of trades available when you're sitting in the middle of May. There was a report the other day of the San Francisco Giants' intrigue and possibly blowing it up. They've obviously had a disastrous season as well, and they may be open to trying to shed some of their big contracts, specifically Rafael Devers and Matt Chapman. So let's put it under the microscope and see if that's worth it. We have a billionaire owner. He is certainly willing to spend. Does it make sense to trade for Rafael Devers or Matt Chapman? Let's start with Devers. Let's explore him. He is 29 years old. He'll be 30 in October. He has had a dreadful season for San Francisco. When he came over to the Giants last year, he was relatively productive. He put up some solid power numbers, even in a ballpark that you figure would be tough to hit home runs in. But this season, he's been god-awful. He makes $28.5 million. He is signed at $28.5 million every single year until 2033 when he is 36 years old. Would I be intrigued by bringing in the bat of Rafael Devers, banking on the fact that let me get him to a new ballpark, let me get him out of San Francisco, let me put him in a lineup with Juan Soto and hypothetically Francisco Lindor and let him cook? Could I see Rafael Devers being more of Boston Devers than San Francisco Devers? I could. I don't think Rafael Devers is cooked. I don't have enough evidence to believe that. So from a bat standpoint, from a power bat standpoint, I think he absolutely supplies that. So that's number one. Number two, defense. Where do you play him? Do you move him back to third base? Do you play him at first base? Or do you tell Rafael Devers, don't worry, you're the designated hitter? That is a huge question, because with this roster and the way it's constituted, and certainly looking ahead at the next decade, because you'd be bringing him in basically for the next decade, what is your position idea with Rafael Devers? The other thing you have to keep in mind is if you absorb a contract like that into his age 34, 35, and 36 season, and even if you decide to give him a position today or tomorrow, he is eventually a designated hitter. Does that fit well when you have Juan Soto signed long-term, who right now may be a designated hitter, or Francisco Lindor, who's only getting older? Are you putting yourself in a spot where you lose flexibility because now you're going to have three guys aging into their 30s who are all going to have to be designated hitters? And then finally, the third thing, and this is why ultimately I say no thank you on Rafael Devers. We'll see if Hoff disagrees in a second.
is I just think it's a bad contract. Even if I'm right that he can resurrect his career, I mean, is he going to do it into his mid-30s? And is this Met team who decided that Brandon Nimmo's contract was such a negative for one fewer year in Marcus Semien, are they really willing?
Isn't it crazy that America is turning 250 years old? I mean, look how far we've come. Now, we've got coolers in our sofas, light-up cup holders, and power-articulating headrests. When it comes to furniture worthy of this major milestone, Bob's Discount Furniture has all the styles all of America wants at the everyday low prices we deserve, backed by tons of five-star reviews. Check out the Sedona Power Reclining Sofa, a genuine leather one-stop shop for relaxation with built-in charging, cup holders, and supportive bobopedic seats, perfect for lounging in the AC all day. You can even complete the look with the matching love seat and recliner. Throwing summer parties, the HomeWorks dining set features comfy bobopedic seating and clever storage built right into the table and bench. Or customize your space with the customer favorite modular Bob Sectional. It has over 1,000 five-star reviews, family-proof construction, and wireless charging for hundreds less than the competition. At only $250 per piece, building your dream sectional is incredibly affordable. Celebrate the 4th at Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. From pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Are you really buying a car online on AutoTrader right now?
Really? I can get super specific with dealer listings and see cars based on my budget.
Mom! You can really have it delivered.
Or pick it up.
Mommy, look!
I think your kid is walking up the slide.
Really?
AutoTrader. Buy your car online. Really?
Willing to bring in a guy who would legitimately be signed for three more years than Brandon Nimmo was? Or acquire a guy who's a worse defender and is declining offensively even more so than Pete Alonso, who they didn't want to offer a five-year deal to? Rafael Devers has 7 years left on his contract after this one. So it's just a bad contract. So is he a big bat? Absolutely. Would he excite me in the moment? Sure. But I think when you factor in the defense, when you factor in the DH question, and when you factor in that point blank, it's a bad contract, I would say no gracias on Rafael Devers.
Now, I'm desperate for professional ball players, but being desperate, I can't be stupid. And ooh, Rafael Devers is not a player that's – you just said it. They got rid of all this talent because of the money, because of the years. Rafael Devers is clearly an issue with every team he goes to. He's not a great ball player. He's fallen off the face of the earth, and we're going to invest in him? That's no chance. I don't want any part of it. I'm sorry.
I'm surprised. I thought you would be desperate enough to say, screw it, we need talent. Bring him in.
We do need talent. At this point in time, call up the young kids. I don't need to see Austin Slater. We already went through this, but there's talent in the minors. Let's give that a shot. I don't need to see Rafael Devers. I don't.
So I agree with you. And I think that most of us would agree that even though it would give them kind of a short burst, maybe even for a couple of years, I think long-term, that's just a bad contract. Again, it's 7 years, $199 million after this season. So that's after this season. So even if you cut this year in half and say, all right, we're paying him $18 million this year, and dare I say the Giants pick it up, you're still looking at a seven-year, $199 million deal. How much of it would the Giants be willing to pick up? I guess that's the other thing you have to factor in. I don't think enough of it. So unfortunately, I don't think this fits. But the other guy, and hear me out on this, this one's a little bit more intriguing, is Matt Chapman. Now, let's get the facts on Matt Chapman. He is old. He is 34 years old. He is also a declining offensive player. Right now this season, Matt Chapman is hitting .229 with one home run, 14 RBIs, and a .624 OPS. The year before that, he hit .230 with 21 home runs, a .770 OPS. Year before that, 27 home runs, a .790 OPS. So he is on basically a three-year decline. But until this season, he was still hitting 20 home runs with a .750 OPS and still playing a very high-level defense at third base. Now, you may say, all right, you just gave me those numbers, Evan. How the hell could you possibly be intrigued by him? Hear me out, okay? So Matt Chapman, after this season, has 4 years, $100 million left on his contract. So it's $25 million a year, and you would have him for his age 34, 35, 36, and 37 season. The way you would think about it, and I say intriguing, doesn't mean I'm definitely going to do it. I just want to throw out how I would think about it, is Marcus Semien going back to San Francisco. So if you think about why they acquired Semien to begin with, it was they deemed Nimmo as a worse contract. That's how they deemed it. They said, all right, we're cutting a year off the Nimmo deal, and we're getting a guy who's a plus defender at second base. Hey, this is a positive for us, even if Semien's declining offensively. So Matt Chapman would have two extra years on his deal. Okay, so that's the positive and negative to this. He's making $1 million less per year. So over the next 2.5 years, it is a freaking even deal in terms of finances. You're taking on two extra years of Chapman. I think the Giants would have to pay for half of that. So I don't even think you're paying the $50 million over the last 2 years. I think you're paying maybe $28 million over the last 2 years. And what you're getting is a plus-level defender at third base. So you're basically saying, I'll take more of a gamble on Chapman than Semien. Now, push comes to shove, the two extra years would scare me off, and the decline would scare me off because it is a steep decline over the last 3 years, but I'm at least giving a Semien Chapman Giants pay for part of its swap. I'm giving it a little bit of thought. I'm giving it more thought than Rafael Devers. What say you?
I say no, thank you. Like, we're just, now we're just changing things up just to see if we can get something to stick to the wall. I mean, honestly, that to me is too much moving parts for not enough payoff. What's Matt Chapman really going to do? Even if he secures a good defensive role at third base, that's not helping the offense. That's not helping everything else. So we need to do better than that. But again, like you said, we're at extra points. So we got to do what we got to do, but I still can't go that route.
Ultimately, I would not do it. I would not do either. I think Chapman, you could at least think about a little bit more because you could probably sell off the Semien deal, so it's kind of a net even deal for the next 2.5 years. But the two extra years of Matt Chapman at age 36 and 37 would be the problem, and you would need San Francisco to basically pay for it, or at least pay a significant portion of it. And then you wonder defensively, same with Semien, at what point do you decline? I mean, both of those guys are still playing defense at a pretty high level, but is that going to last throughout the rest of their contract?
Listen, I don't want to get into the semantics of the Giants, but let me ask you a question. Didn't they want to spend all this money? They were throwing money to everybody, trying to get somebody to finally bite. They got people to bite, and now they're trying to sell them off. That's a problem. I don't want anything to do with this.
Look at the players that they're selling off. I mean, the Devers thing just has not worked out. The Matt Chapman thing, after a really good 2024, he was a 7 WAR player that year. He played high-level defense, at 27 home runs, stole 15 bases, had an 800 OPS. Like, that's tremendous. But the last 2 years has been a decline. This is the risk of bringing in, you know, the aging player, that you just don't know when they're going to hit a wall. You have no idea. So, yeah, I think that what we always do, I do this on the Fan as well, is you examine it. You examine the guys that are available. You go through the pluses and the negatives, and ultimately you make a decision. I agree with you. My decision on both guys would be to pass. Let's hear from the people. The RicoB@gmail.com. A lot of opinions on the Mets call-up of A.J. Ewing, who is set to make his major league debut. Kendrick writes, Evan, the phenomenal one has finally arrived as David Stearns, the face that runs the place, looks to make a splash. After our Nets future hopes and dreams took a brutal hit on Sunday, the Mets calling up A.J. Ewing gave this fan base the jolt it needed. An AED saves lives, and his AED, A.J. Ewing's debut, might just save our season. Almost 12 years to the day after Jacob deGrom gets his call, Ewing gets his. With McLean, Benji, now Ewing on this roster, the new world order is formed. The National League don't want none. Very well done there, sir. It is kind of crazy to think that it is right around the anniversary of Jacob deGrom. And of course, and this may live in Met history, hopefully it does, they got A.J. Ewing as the comp pick for losing Jacob deGrom. And the question was asked of me the other day because I brought up deGrom after going to Yankee Stadium to watch him face the Yankees and briefly had a 5-minute discussion about where the deGrom decision lies in Met history. Was it a bad one to not be more aggressive in free agency? Was it a good one? Examining what he's done in Texas, examining what they've done with the money. And the question was quickly brought to me, which is, hey, Evan, how do you factor A.J. Ewing into this? And I go back and forth on it because if they love the player in the draft, they still could have drafted him. Maybe not in that slot, maybe earlier. Maybe he falls later. So it's tough. Do I fully attach it to letting DeGrom go? I've never fully attached David Wright to letting Hampton go. You know, and I still think back to that decision to not outbid the Rockies and allow the school system to get Mike Hampton to go to Denver, Colorado. I've had thoughts that the Mets should have been more aggressive, that the Mets should have gone after him, and if not him, Mike Messina. Because ultimately, if they liked David Wright, the prospect, isn't it possible or even likely that they would have drafted him somewhere else? So I am conflicted. But yes, as A.J. Ewing makes his debut, keep that in mind. He is here because they let Jacob deGrom go. Jose writes, kids got to play every day. Soto stays in left field. Taylor is the fourth guy off the bench. That's his role. The Mets are horrible in development. Just give the guys positions and let them play every day. Examples, Dom Smith was a gold glove first baseman and they threw him in left field and they did the same with Duda. Murphy was all over the place in the field early on and the same with Wilmer. At this point, we want to see all the kids play every day. I don't care if they go 0 for 30. That's part of everyone's baseball growth. The sending up and down or starting the bench is what killed Beatty, Vientos, and Alvarez. This team is unwatchable, but if you play the kids, it gives us more reason to tune in. I do agree that from here on forward, you got to play these guys every day. TJ writes, Evan, I know you probably can do with a lot of relievers. They are fickle. But my God, how about Rico Garcia? David Stearns DFA'd this guy 2 times. He's absolutely filthy. He's allowed 1 hit in 64 batters this season, and I get to watch Craig Kimbrell. Yes, Rico Garcia, who was good when he was a part of the Syracuse shuttle last year. Let's not forget that. It's not like Rico Garcia sucked as a Met. Like, he was mostly good when he was on that Syracuse shuttle. He looks unhittable. I watched him on Monday night shutting down the New York Yankees with a 1-2-3 inning. I'd love to kill David Stearns for that one, and ultimately it's on his resume, so we should crush him for that one. But relievers are incredibly fickle. Cleon writes, the leather industry has a restraining order against Mark Vientos. Any manager at any level should be let go immediately by letting Vientos play the field. I think, unfortunately, right now, they don't have a lot of wonderful options. Ideally, he would just DH. But right now, he's the first baseman. Who else are you playing at first base? Brett Beatty's now the everyday third baseman. So who are you playing? Unless you make that call to Ryan Clifford, which may be the next call they make. Also, looking at my budget, I realized the high price of gas was creating a significant budget deficit. Thank you, David, for doing a great job destroying this team so badly that eliminated the Mets playoff chances early enough in the season so I can allocate Mets playoff tickets to gas. That made me laugh. Pete, New Jersey writes, I wish you guys a very good evening. He wrote this on Monday night. But I feel like there can't be a good evening. I'm not claiming to know anything about A.J. Ewing. I only know he's rocking through the leagues. But seriously, this is like a move the Jets would make that ends up crushing a player's potential. How long ago did Ewing get promoted to AAA? It feels too early for him to see major league pitching, and this offense is a damn archipelago. Each batter an island, not connected to the next batter. and gives him no protection. He might back cleanup his first game to really make it perfect. Sorry I'm mad. I don't like this call-up at all, and will hopefully wear a huge L. Where do you guys stand on this? Every player is different in terms of how much time they need in the minor leagues. There is no exact science to this. I think the Mets clearly are desperate, but that doesn't mean that it's going to fail. It doesn't mean that A.J. Ewing is going to come up here and just be completely overwhelmed. Jim from Jersey writes, is it me or has Mendy stopped saying, quote, we have the talent? I have noticed that. He's kind of eliminated saying that. Maybe because he realizes they don't. Joe writes, A.J. Ewing, how do you see him fitting into this lineup? Who will be taking time away from? What does this runway look like? I think it takes time away from Tyrone Taylor. I think Tyrone Taylor probably goes back to his role as a fourth outfielder. Where would I bat him? I kind of like the idea of taking the pressure off of him, so I'd bat him ninth to begin. And then if he produces, you can quickly elevate him. But I don't know if it's a great idea to just throw him right in there. I don't know if that's the best idea. Nick from Charlotte writes, Evan, I am here to make a prediction. And this, by the way, this email was sent on Sunday. I want to give you context on this, all right? This is Sunday after the Mets lost the three-game series to the Diamondbacks. I am here to make a prediction. We're going to go on a run fueled by A.J. Ewing starting with our next homestand. I think today, Sunday, was the wake-up call that Stearns needed. I believe he will move Brett Beatty full-time back to third base while Mauricio and Lindor are out and call up A.J. Ewing while DFAing Ibanez. I read this email on the Sunday Rico Bronya. I'm reading it again because it hits. When Ewing comes up, he'll give us the offensive spark we need, and he and Benj will become a solid 2-3 in our lineup, moving Bichette to the four spot. You heard it first here. And Nick follows up. Step one, Ewing being called up. Here it comes. Now let's hope that you're right. Now let's hope that he's here and he produces. I'd hit him ninth to start. I would try to take the pressure off of him a little bit. And if he produces, he can very quickly elevate up this batting order. I am curious because a lot of Met fans have sent me emails and calls over the last few days and weeks saying that they won't go to Citi Field until Carlos Mendoza is fired. And I've called BS on that, saying, come on, you're going to go to the ballpark because Kai Correa is managing or Andy Green is managing. So I do wonder to the Met fans out there, are you more likely now to go to Citi Field because they called up A.J. Ewing? I unfortunately will not be there for this three-game series against Detroit. It has nothing to do with weather. It has nothing to do with the way they've played. It has to do with Little League. So I'll be missing the Tigers series. I'll be watching every game. Maybe there'll be a live Rico right after. That's why you should subscribe to the Rico Bronya wherever you download your podcasts or the WFAN YouTube page. And then the Subway series, yes, I'll be there for that. I look forward to that. For all you Met fans who happen to be Knicks fans, and I know that's a lot of you, and you took great joy in the Knicks fan invading Philadelphia and laughing at the Sixer fan, boy, you're getting your comeuppance within a week because I fully expect that Citi Field will be littered with Yankee fans. The good news, though, is that it won't be as embarrassing as what happened to Philadelphia. So that's the positive. But either way, make sure you're subscribed to the Rico Bronya. I was notified that there's some issues with the Odyssey app. It hasn't updated. So here's what I tell you. We're always doing Ricos. Like, we never go more than 2 days without a Rico Bronya. So if you don't see it updated, try somewhere else where you download your podcast, whether it's the Apple Podcast Store or it's Spotify, or it's just going to the YouTube page where there's a video of each Rico we do, and you'll never miss an episode. Thank you very much for checking out the A.J. Ewing is Here edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.